this Valentine's Day, Wednesday, February 14th at 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us for another episode of The Conversation and talk to Michael Knowles. If you're a Daily Wire subscriber, you can log on to our website, open the chat box, and type in all those thoughts you can't ask anyone else. Michael, how much do you love the new tax plan? Michael, will you ever write a real book? The Conversation will stream live on YouTube, Facebook, and the Daily Wire website. It's free for everyone to watch, but only subscribers can join and ask the questions. Join the conversation.
Well, everyone, I'm sorry, but also not sorry. I'm Alicia Krauss. Welcome to this romantic Valentine's episode of The Conversation, featuring the Daily Wire's own Michael Knowles. This is going to be a pretty fun episode. And remember, everyone, it's free to watch, but only the conversation questions that can be asked come from subscribers. So please remember, our conversation is live for everyone to watch, but only you can be a part of it if you are a subscriber. You can go to dailywire.com right now to subscribe, open up the conversation box, enter your questions in the chat box and all that stuff, and ask you anything.
Absolutely.
That's what the promo said.
Ask me anything. This is going to be a real saucy episode.
Anything. Be sure to tune in for next month's episode featuring the one and only Ben Shapiro. Unfortunately, I don't think Ben is down to do a hilarious promotion video like we just saw.
He asked to borrow my smoking jacket.
He did? Well, and the bow tie that you wore for the State of the Union. So next month is going to be Ben. It's going to be lots of fun. That's on Tuesday, March 13th. I don't know. Maybe we can get him to dress up like a leprechaun because it's the week of
You got him to
St.
do that
Patty's
bunny
Day.
Rabbit thing.
I did, I don't know. It was a costume he already owned, and he's referring, of course, to the Daily Wire Christmas story. March 13th, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Pacific time. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you finally made it all the way back.
This was by the skin of my teeth. I just got off an airplane. Uh-huh. I haven't slept in about 2 days. Uh-huh. I was in Palm Beach for a panel at a lovely place called the Kuder Institute. Mm-hmm. And so we were discussing the future of conservatism. I got off and I'm very underslept. And so hopefully the answers will be even more illuminating and with one foot in heaven, possibly.
So speaking of heaven, are you getting in even though you don't have ash on your forehead?
I do have to go. It's Ash Wednesday. So Ash Wednesday has coincided with Valentine's Day,
yep.
Which I was very pleased about because Catholics have to fast on Ash Wednesday. It's a fasting day. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to still do my Valentine's Day dinner with sweet little Elisa tonight because it would be a very cheap check. But unfortunately, we're going to push it off a couple days. And I wasn't able to make it to Mass before getting here, so I have to go to an evening Mass tonight.
So a Valentine's-related story that kind of broke in the news today. It seems as if Rob Porter and Hope Hicks have called it quits.
That's, to quote a great man, sad. That's sad. That's sad news on Valentine's Day.
So she's single and all alone on Valentine's Day.
Listen, sweet little Lisa watches this show. I can't make any improper comments about this, but you know, I'm sure. Listen, there are many very eligible bachelors walking around the White House. I'm sure that someone
will. Sorry, your picture just popped up again.
Yikes!
Like the video.
Yeah. Well, don't show Hope Hicks that.
Are you gonna confess to what you filmed? Like. The next time you go?
You know, there is one unforgivable sin in the gospel, mm-hmm. but there might be two, actually. I think there might be two. I don't know if I'll bring it up with the priest.
We have our first question, guys. I wasn't just stalling just to stall. We wanted to get this very first question from Joel J. He says, "What's up, Casa Knowles? How jealous does your fiancé get when you flirt borderline harass your female panelists? How much flirting would be considered... how much flirting would be considered by the Catholic Church?"
Probably considered sinful or something by the Catholic Church. Well, you know, sweet little Elisa might as well be the originator of the Me Too campaign. I don't think she feels jealousy. I think she feels commiseration with our fellow panelists. You know, you're a panelist.
Did you just wear her down? Yeah. Is that what happened?
Mac, like, please.
You were just like, yeah. She just was like, fine. Is she a nurturing type person? She thinks she can change
she's
you.
She's a saint. We're talking about the Catholic Church. I don't know how much flirting is considered sinful by the church, but I do know Lent is a time of spiritual discipline. Mm-hmm. We fast like our Lord fasted in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. That's a time to think, you know, have a memento mori, think about death, mm-hmm. and think about the sacrifice of Christ. And it sanctifies us in this period. Sweet little Elisa is sanctified every single day of her life. So she's certainly going to go straight up.
Straight up?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in purgatory?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Of course, yeah.
So you're spending a long time there?
I'm going to...
You're just going to be on the island with Jack for a really long time?
I'm not a gambling man, but I would put money on a fairly long stint in purgatory, if I'm lucky, hopefully. That'd be a win. It's better than the other place.
Okay. Spencer Regal says, is it a mere coincidence that Maud from Another Kingdom shares her voice with Sweet Little Lisa?
I did. So Another Kingdom, for those who didn't watch it, and if you didn't watch it, go over there right now and download the podcast.
It's on Ricochet.
It's on Ricochet.
It's what you and Drew do.
Yeah, it's Drew wrote this excellent novel, Another Kingdom, about a 30-year-old schlub who can't catch a break in Hollywood. And for some reason, he cast me in that. I don't know why.
Sounds familiar.
I don't know.
He also write a blank book and convince Ben Shapiro to let him work for him?
Yeah. It was, you know, there was a lot of method acting in this role. And so I performed all the parts.
Uh-huh.
And so I told my fiance, Sweet Little Elisa, I said, you know, I didn't do this intentionally, mm-hmm. but what was called for in one of the characters' voices was a little bit similar to Sweet Little Lisa. Sweet Little Lisa has a voice a little bit like this, Mike.
Except not in real life, folks.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's interpretations and uh-huh. artistic things. Uh-huh. And so anyway, I told her that I used her voice for one of the characters, and mm-hmm. she said, oh, Mac, is it that lovely protagonist, wonderful woman? I said, yeah, something like that. And it ended up being this character's half rat and half woman, and I think she's still a little upset about that, but...
I would be upset. I'm assuming she just doesn't watch your podcast.
Otherwise, certainly not.
There would
not
be something
moment.
Every single day mm-hmm. that she could be upset about.
She gets enough of it. Yeah, she doesn't need to have an extra hour or two of that a day.
So before we continue, I have to do a reveal of an inside joke here at the Daily Wire that is absolutely hilarious.
Okay.
And you're pretty skilled at handling random scenarios.
You saw my show yesterday.
Saw your show yesterday. And let's just say, you know, this is a great reminder to tell everyone that the conversation is brought with Michael Knowles is brought to you by Skillshare. Watch these skills as Michael Knowles tries to dodge uh-huh. an intruder who's just looking for Dale.
But we know so little about the guy that actually... Yeah. Oh, hold on one second. I'm just finishing up a show.
I'm sorry. But,
yes, could I just finish up my program?
Well, how long will it take?
About 5 minutes.
Okay. Can you give that to Dale?
Certainly.
Thank you so much.
We've got a guest on the show. So maybe that's my Valentine.
Thank you for watching yesterday. If anybody saw, so I'm in Palm Beach. I was being hosted by Dale Kuder, a lovely woman of the Kuder Institute, and we're in her beautiful villa in Palm Beach, and we're getting ready to do this. So I had to broadcast from there mm-hmm. in order to do the show. The only place with reliable internet was this little broom closet on the side. And this woman, that woman obviously is not Dale. I don't know who she is, but she...
All I gotta say, she's like, no, five minutes, too long to wait.
I like it. There's a real Palm Beach attitude of, I got places to be, honey. And so she walks in. I don't know if she knew that I was broadcasting a show. I sort of think maybe she thought I was watching a show or having a phone call.
Yeah.
But she says, you have to give this to her. Like, I guess she assumed I was on staff. And then I said, well, I just need 5 minutes.
You do kind of look like you would be like a
the cabana
Beach,
boy.
Like cabana boy.
Oh, yeah, I was a cabana
or
boy.
Or like, what are the gophers called, like in golf?
The gopher, like a caddy or
caddy.
Something. Yeah. So, but she wouldn't, I said, could I just have 5 minutes? And nope, it's about 4.5 minutes too long, hon. Here you go. So I never found out who she is, but Dale is very nice. You know, oh my gosh. I forgot to give Dale the envelope. I kid you not, I didn't give her the envelope. Well, I hope she can. Maybe it's a Valentine.
Well,
maybe she
folks,
get it today.
If you need to work on skills,
yes,
like remembering things, writing things, mm-hmm. hobbies.
Yeah, that's right. Skillshare is a wonderful platform. I really like this. It's an online platform with over 18,000 classes in design, business, technology, and more. I wonder, that woman was probably so busy because she had to run to one of those 18,000 classes. You can take them in graphic design, social media, marketing, illustration, mobile photography, you name it, they've got it. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, start a side hustle, you know, this is the 21st century, so obviously people, you don't just work for a company for 60 years anymore. You have got to widen your skill set. And, you know, this is also the 21st century, so you don't need to go leave your house, heaven forfend. You can do it from the comfort of your own office, your own couch, your own computer. Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. The one that I really like is the time management one. I have a little bit of trouble in time management. You might have seen we throw my show together in the broom closet yesterday. So but there are a gazillion other classes. They're really, really good. And it's just available to you. You think of all the time you waste just watching some random stupid TV show or just kind of staring vacantly off into space when you could be adding to your skill set. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for my listeners, not for anybody else. Don't say I never did anything for you. Get 2 months of Skillshare for 99 cents. That is, you would be very, very foolish not to take advantage of that. That is 99 cents more than nothing. That is a pretty good deal. Skillshare is offering Michael Knowles Show listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 18,000 classes for just 99 cents. To sign up, go to Skillshare.com/Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, not slash Dale, slash Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Go to Skillshare.com/Michael to start your 2 months now. What is it? Skillshare.com/Michael.
And I have to say, actually, my husband is super difficult to purchase gifts for, mm-hmm. and I could see purchasing something like this for him for Valentine's Day.
It's really good. It's basically free, so he'll end up being a cheap date if you get him the 2 month deal.
Much better than like other things he wants. Like the oh gosh, too much. So we have more questions. We're gonna roll through these. Ian, I don't know how to say your last name, Ian, so I'm just gonna skip over it. Sorry. Michael, I got my Tumblr today. What's the best way to use it without being swarmed for having one?
I gotta tell you, half of my Twitter feed and my email box is people begging me to get this Leftist Tears Tumblr.
Yep.
They are just, how do I get it? And you can't get it anywhere. Like, you just have to become an annual member.
Yep.
It's the only way to get it. And so I feel your pain, to quote Bill Clinton.
Just rub it in their face, pain. Though. It's kind of fun to...
You could do that, but I'm actually a little surprised. Are you telling me you would take this out of your bunker? Just survive. I mean, this is some serious stuff. This isn't your run-of-the-mill I know.
Maybe he's in God's country, though, and not on the East or West Coast. So he's okay to take that out in public.
That could be the case. Yeah. He's with fellow travelers.
Yeah.
But, you know, some other talk show hosts, they have these great ashtrays that they use, and those you can bring out anywhere. But for the Leftist Here's Tumblr, I mean, this is FDA-approved. It's the only FDA-approved way to store your radioactive leftist tears, which obviously can be hot or cold, but always salty and delicious. I would keep that in a very safe place, because when the fallout happens, mm-hmm. when we get the wall built across the southern border, when we start deporting all of the dreamers, when we start bombing Little Rocket Man and that dragon lady in North Korea, the tears are going to be flowing. You're going to want to protect you and your family. So make sure you have this in a very safe place. I'd protect it from the hordes. I wouldn't let it leave the house.
Like prepper style, those mm-hmm. who prep don't tell people they prep. Those who have leftist
That's
tears
right.
tumblers don't talk about the leftist tears tumblers.
That's right. It's very valuable.
A very important question from Joshua. He wants to know, Knowles, are those glasses prescription?
They are. I don't like the glasses at all.
I actually thought when I first started here at the Daily Wire back in October that you wore them for looks. I thought it was like thing that you were just
because I wanted to look more like Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought, you know, I don't look sufficiently like Rachel Maddow during the regular day. No, I got these. I made it 27 years of my life without needing glasses or without getting glasses mm-hmm. rather, and my vision's been blurry for a couple years now. But I don't care if I like swerve and hit pedestrians or crash into a telephone pole or anything. Mm-hmm. What I really care about is I can't read the teleprompter to do ad reads. So I had to get these glasses. And but
did you pick them out or did your fiance pick them
so
out?
So this was another example of a sweet little Lisa being a saint. I decided it would be really funny if when I finally broke down and got glasses, uh-huh. if I got the exact same pair that she had, just to drive her crazy. So we actually, sweet little Lisa and I have the exact same pair of glasses.
Are you serious?
Glasses. Yeah.
So you're wearing women's glasses?
No, it's a unisex thing.
No, you just admitted you're wearing
Warby
women's
Parker.
Glasses, son.
This is, oh my
You are
my
wearing
gosh.
Women's glasses.
Well, it is, you know, it's a very modern style
I mean,
of glasses.
Is it,
so.
Is this in the booklet of how I should handle this scenario for somebody that's transitioning in the company?
Yeah, I learned the word pansexual. I think that means you're everything. So that's me. That's me.
Okay.
The glasses are just a symbol of that.
Okay. But the rest of the outfit is still identifying as a male today?
I'm mostly a pansexual because whenever sweet little Lisa's cooking something up on the stove, it gets me very scintillated. But I think there are other meanings of that word,
Folks,
too.
Folks, we told you this would be a very odd and special romantic edition of the conversation. I apologize. Raphael says, hey, Michael, do you think the UAV struck down by Israel has ties to the UAV sent by Obama and not auto-destructed.
The UAV, what is the UAV? I don't know what that is.
I think he's referring to the incident yesterday between Iran and Israel.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I've been traveling, so my head hasn't been terribly in the news. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, the Obama administration's policy toward Israel and toward Iran was very backwards. it was an example of one of the breaths of fresh air. When Donald Trump came in, we thought that the entire world was going to blow up. We were told that the Middle East was going to fall into all hell. I haven't read up enough on this story to make some kind of statement like that. Even though every single conspiracy theory, by the way, that everyone has floated about Barack Obama has been true. Other than birtherism, everything has come to pass, as we've seen over the past few months. So I won't comment on that this exactly. What I will say, though, is we expected when Donald Trump came into office that he would blow up the Middle East. He's not refined like Barack Obama. He's not playing the role of the president. He's got his finger on the button in all of this. But what we have learned is that genteel, Davos, sophisticated, polite strategy of Barack Obama and the fellow Davos crowd and the people on the left was a failure. It was an utter failure. It looked like it would be a success, but it was a failure.
See, I would disagree, though. I think that a lot of people didn't even think it looked like it would be a
success. Well, yeah, over time, Barack Obama's performance degraded.
Anything with Ben Rhodes at the helm, I don't think that you could say was slated for
right. But this was something we were talking about on the panel yesterday, too, because Donald...
So can you share a little bit about where you were yesterday?
Sure, yeah.
Is that public information?
I'm sorry that I'm not answering your question, but I haven't read up enough in the past day on this to give an educated answer.
He was too busy watching Netflix and downloadable shows on the plane.
I was hanging with Dale. But on this point, this was something we talked about. I was at this panel at Palm Springs, and we were talking about the future of the conservative movement and what it... I was there with some conservatives who are more critical of El Presidente than I am. And, you know, this president doesn't look like a president. He doesn't talk like a president, not like things that we've seen.
Tweet like a president.
He doesn't tweet like a president. He's the first Twitter president. But the substance of what we're getting is real. And I think our looks can be deceiving. And a lot of what this presidency has been is cracking this patina of credibility, this facade of things that look nice and sound nice. There was this clip of Barack Obama where he promised that FISA wasn't being abused to spy on Americans, to spy on his political opponents. I promise. I guarantee it. And now we know that's a lie. We know that was a lie. And so I don't really care. I think a lot of my fellow conservatives are dismayed and they're uncomfortable by a guy who doesn't look sophisticated. But I think his handling has been really wonderful. And to just go back to the point about Israel, you see this in our relationship with our central ally in the Middle East. Under Barack Obama, who was genteel and sophisticated, it was a terrible, terrible relationship. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, under President Covfefe, we've been able to reestablish that bond. And I think that's a really nice thing.
Moving along, Heather Young says, "Hey, Michael, I see Andrew and Ben make fun of you all the time." Heather, not just Andrew and Ben, like pretty much the entire office.
Yeah.
She wants to know why.
Why is that? I don't know. I can't
imagine. Why not?
I don't know why they would ever want to make fun of little old me. But, you know, there was... So we all knew each other before the Daily Wire started.
Yeah.
And so... But I will say, during the blank book phenomenon, I think that really brought everything to the fore.
Yeah.
Because... You know, Ben has written a gazillion books. Drew has written a gazillion books.
Like actual books.
Very good books with words in it, you know.
And with words.
And I think they were so, we were all so shocked when the book came out. And so the blank book comes out. It sells more copies than anything. And at the time, Ben is shaking his head. He's saying, "This is the worst thing ever. This is so frustrating." And then he lent me his literary agent to negotiate the deal. He said, "Why am I doing this? Why am I? Oh no, we just have to fire Knowles. I guess you can have a show now. Oh, why am I?" And it's this real tension. I don't know. It's a real.
I mean, he really does look for any example. He thought that the conversation promo would be a really great thing to take to HR.
Mm-hmm, that's true. He actually suggested for Lent that I consider giving up my show and showing up here for work. But I don't know. I debated it.
I mean, I could fill in.
It's true. I couldn't tell. I didn't know if that would be as sanctifying.
Is it too late for you to do that?
Might be Lent 2019 will have to be the case.
The conversation with Michael Knowles is brought to you by Skillshare. And, I mean, they're really great to us here at the Daily Wire. And we even have people, I mean, we do as we say. There are people here in our production team that are signed up for Skillshare.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use it. It's a great platform.
Yeah.
Skillshare is an online learning platform. Did I tell you about this already? Well, I'll tell you again. With over 18,000 classes in design, business, technology, and more, Now, you can take classes. You could take classes in graphic design, social media, marketing, illustration, mobile photography. I don't actually take those. What I do need to take, I take a class on time management. They have a lot of kind of weird ones, too. They have one on hypnotism. I try to hypnotize myself and, you know, try to stop smoking cigars or something. Hasn't quite worked yet. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, start a side hustle, or just explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. It's a really great program. I say this a lot because obviously I get paid about 7 cents every quarter to come into work here. I don't get paid very much, you know. But one of the great benefits is that occasionally they'll give me some freebies like Skillshare. And it's a great opportunity because when Ben finally pulls the trigger and just sends me out of the window onto the boulevard here, then I will hopefully have some more skills so that I can get some other job, maybe. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for my listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That's right, Skillshare is offering Michael Knowles Show listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 18,000 classes for 99 cents. To sign up, where do you go? You go to Skillshare.com/Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. Go to Skillshare.com/Michael. Start your 2 months now. Don't say I never did anything for you. Skillshare.com/Michael.
So time management?
Time management.
Are you having to work really hard to manage time, like before the wedding, with the wedding planning and stuff?
I am, and also to remember to take the classes so that I can learn how to do time management. I'm handling very little about the wedding itself.
Okay.
I still have to get my tuxedo for the reception and my stroller for the ceremony because the ceremony is before 6 p.m.
There will be more time.
We're
going to talk about that in a second. But first, I want to remind everyone that the conversation is live for everyone to watch on YouTube, Facebook, and of course dailywire.com, but only you can be a part of it if you are a subscriber. And by being a part of it, we mean asking our very own Michael Knowles the questions here on this special Valentine's Day edition of The Conversation. So go to dailywire.com right now so you could subscribe and join us. And be sure to tune in for the next month's episode featuring the one and only editor-in-chief, Ben Shapiro, El Jefe himself, on Tuesday, March 13th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Pacific. Let's move along because I need to talk about the bolo or whatever the heck you just mentioned in a second. Matt says, Michael, what Catholic podcasts do you listen to? I'm curious to see if we listen to the same ones.
You know, I do. I'll sample Catholic podcasts if I want to hear a speaker talk about some book he's written or something like that, or a priest that I like speak. But mostly what I do is I'll listen to Catholic radio. So there are these great radio stations, and there's Immaculate Heart Radio in California, Relevant Radios, and they have good Catholic stations. And they're really good because they're pretty intellectual. And I love conservative talk radio too, but 99.7% of conservative talk radio are commercials. So you get, you know, Catholic radio is a little more focused away from that. And then most of my time thinking about these things is reading. So I'll read. I'm doing the Bible in a year. I'm on Leviticus, which feels like I'm doing the Bible in 50 years. and then I love reading Chesterton. I had Father Michael Schmitz on the show the other day. I like listening to him. Father George Rutler, I like to read. Fulton Sheen, obviously Ronald Knox. You can go down the rabbit hole from one writer, and he says I was inspired by this writer and this writer and this writer. All of the Catholic podcasts generally that I've listened to are pretty good. I do prefer, though, the ones, without naming any names, I prefer the ones that are a little more serious and a little less sentimental. Some of the, even in the Catholic world, is that like Eagle's Wings, Everybody's Got a Hungry Heart. That's Bruce Springsteen, but there's a hymn that's like that too, and I don't really care for that very much. So the more sober ones and the more serious ones I prefer.
Okay, interesting. Paul says, I'm a fellow mackerel snapping papist. I feel like every time I'm on the conversation with you, we use this word.
Mackerel?
No.
Papist. Yeah, that's really true.
And I was wondering if you would comment on the Jesuits. My church was taken over by the Black Robes, and I've noticed a decidedly social justice flavor.
I'll tell you. Well,
you explain to the broad, like, non-denominational.
I think the Jesuits
I
think the Jesuits have talked enough about the Jesuits that I don't need to weigh in. But I'll tell you all you need to know about the Jesuits. So the Jesuits are an order in the Catholic Church. And they're similar in some ways to the Dominicans. You've heard of this order, the Dominicans, right? So they were both founded by Spaniards, both Spanish orders, and they are founded to combat heresy. So The Dominicans were founded to fight the Albigensians, mm-hmm. and the Jesuits were founded to fight the Protestants.
Okay.
And so the main difference I would ask
is... the Andrew Clavins.
The main difference is, when was the last time you ever heard of an Albigensian? That's the main difference between those two groups.
Okay. So he's saying that they tend to be more, instead of fighting heresy, they're into fighting social justice stuff?
They clearly didn't succeed in their first mission. they tend to be a little political. The line about the Jesuits is they're a little clever. They seem a little too clever by half, but they run great schools and things like that. Some conservatives in the Catholic Church look skeptically at them. The head of the Jesuits is he's called the Black Pope. You know, it was an order founded only to be responsible to the Pope and report directly to the Pope. So there are probably more jokes about Jesuits than there are about any other Catholic order. But they're okay. They do good work. They do good education work. That's all I'll comment on publicly.
bring you to Cigar Bar and you might taste more.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, yeah, get a couple drinks in me.
Good to know. Iago says, it's nice to see you again, Mike. Do you think history will ever be honest looking back on Obama's legacy and the effect that he had on politics and the culture?
Yes, but not anytime soon. Hmm. So the mainstream media are so nakedly in the tank for him in a way that wasn't even true even of Bill Clinton, and certainly before him. History will be honest because history tends to be honest over time about certain people, but it requires the distance of history. So you also won't see a balanced history of George W. Bush anytime soon, or for that matter, probably even Ronald Reagan. And Barack Obama was such a creation in many ways of the mainstream media. He had basically no qualifications to be president. He never showed up when he was a state senator in Illinois. He was in the Senate for, I think, about 17 minutes before he was elected president. And then he won the Nobel Prize, was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize 12 days after entering office, and he won it for some reason. So they're so bought in. He's such a product of what the commentariat and the mainstream media have espoused, that I don't think they could ever be honest about him. But history ultimately will be, and we might need to have the historical distance that we currently have from Thucydides in order for it to happen. But ultimately, I'm confident that a balanced view of him will come out in this century or the next.
Joshua says, Mr. Knowles, what would you do if your show became vastly more popular than Ben or Andrew's shows?
I would be fired, I think. I'm pretty sure that I would be...
You wouldn't just rub it in their face?
Well, a little bit? That goes without saying. It's funny because the rational part of me says, I don't see how that could happen. Ben has the biggest conservative podcast in the country. Drew's show is so phenomenal. It's one of the few podcasts that I listen to. It is so incredible culturally. There isn't any parallel to that podcast in the country. That said, I think I've sold more books than those guys, and I didn't write a book. So I guess things could happen. Donald Trump is president. You know, a lot.
Never say never, whatever you do.
Never say never. So yeah, let's keep it up, guys. I think the way my blank book happened is that a bunch of trolls on Twitter decided it would be funny if the blank book became number one. So, you know, it'd be pretty funny if my podcast became number one. Just saying.
Hey.
Just throwing that out there.
Hey, it is Valentine's Day.
Miracles can
happen. Yeah. Right? Maybe. I don't know. Nicholas Winton says, what is your take on the Proud Boys?
The Proud Boys. I'm not a Proud Boy. I don't go to the meetings. I do love Gavin McGinnis. I'm extremely entertained by him. I think he's a great voice and very, very funny. The thing I don't love about the Proud Boys, I like the exuberance of it. I like the not being some self-flagellating, you know, everything. America's the worst thing in the world, and it's created more disorder than any place else in the world. I do like that aspect of it. It seems a little reactionary to me, so I don't love that. It isn't alt-right, for whatever that term means anymore. It's been so watered down as to mean everything and nothing. But it seems a little reactionary, and so I don't love Western chauvinism per se. I love the West. You know,
That sounds like a very Dennis Prager comment of you.
Is it? Yeah. Well, I try. I've got to deepen my voice a little bit and become larger.
But I can just hear Dennis in the back of my head talking about Western values.
Yeah, I love that. I love the West itself, but I don't love the Western chauvinism. I don't know that we need that kind of rah-rah enthusiasm, it could go wrong. That said, I've been to these speeches where radical insane lefties and Antifa are like throwing bombs in the streets and punching people in the face. And so I think it's perfectly natural and admirable that there's this movement on the right of saying, no, you can't do that. We're not gonna let you do that. And a little muscle flexing. I'm all for that. I do fear that an organization that's made up of exuberant young men who tend to be a little brighter and more clever than others, it could go wrong. It hasn't gone wrong yet, but we should be a little wary of that, because we should love the thing, not just the appearance of the thing. We should love the West itself. And to love the West, this is what the alt-right gets totally wrong, right? Mm-hmm. They love the appearance of the West. They love the form of the West, but they don't like the thing that makes the West, which is Christianity and everything that has come out of Christianity, natural law and natural rights and all of the art and the culture and the modes of behavior and the ways of dealing with people and politeness and civilized society.
Even equality.
Right. They don't, yeah, mm-hmm. Liberty and grace and equality, mm-hmm. they have a fairly perverse view of that. The mm-hmm. alt-right, not the Proud Boys. Mm-hmm. So I think just focus on the heart of the matter. Keep your eyes on what you're really worshiping. You know, culture and cult come from the same word. So keep your eyes on what you're really, what the culture is really looking at. And I think it will be very healthy. And then if that's the case, then the Proud Boys would have been, would have instigated a good thing. I just fear that it could go wrong. So I'd tread lightly.
Steven Sindel says, I've learned that more and more high school English and history classes are leftist indoctrination mills. How do we battle this nearly invisible threat?
I was writing an essay about this yesterday because when I was in school, and I'm sure it is much, much worse now, we were assigned Howard Zinn's book, A People's History of the United States, as though it were a history textbook. Wow. Howard Zinn's book is a polemic. It would be like if we taught, I don't know, a Sean Hannity book or a Rush Limbaugh book as pure academic history. Mm-hmm. It isn't. It has a very particular political point of view. Howard Zinn is the same way on the other side. It's outrageous anti-history. Mitch Daniels, the former governor of Indiana, current mm-hmm. president of Purdue University, said that it's execrable anti-historical trash or something like that. But I don't think it's invisible. Hmm. It certainly doesn't appear invisible to me. The way to combat that is to read your own books. I don't really see a way, and also to support programs such as School Choice, to support programs that crack the left-wing monopoly over public education, mm-hmm. because, and a lot feeds into this, the curricula feed into this, the format of the schools feed into this, and the nature of public sector unions even. Mm-hmm. There are government unions, right, that negotiate with the government. And neither side has an incentive to not give each other exactly what they want, right? Mm-hmm. It's a really corrupt system. Samuel Gompers and FDR, both leaders of the labor movement, both said that the public sector should never be able to unionize. So we can attack all of those things from the macro level. From the micro level, read good historians, read better historians, read, mm-hmm. Don't read Howard Zinn. I mean, read Howard Zinn. I've read his stupid book. But you should also read, I've recommended this author before quite a lot. I love Jacques Barzin. I think he's a great mm-hmm. writer of the modern era. Read Donald Kagan, read John Gaddis. There are plenty of historians you can read. Read Samuel Eliot Morison, who now, to these days, is mocked for some reason. He's the preeminent historian of his age. Read those kind of guys as well, and it'll then you'll be the smartest person in your class. You'll probably fail out of school because the teacher won't let you talk about it. But I think that will give you a great perspective. I would actually take it as a good thing. I would take it as an advantage. I've always been in left-wing places my whole life, mm-hmm. and I've been a conservative for the vast majority of my life. And it was a great advantage to bump up constantly against left-wing views, and especially against smart left-wingers, because it forces you to defend your own point of view. Mm-hmm. It forces you to know not only what you think down to the bone, down to the core, but also to know what the other guy thinks so that you can refute every bit of it. The left does not have that advantage in America. They have these very half-baked, sentimental, ridiculous notions that are constantly reinforced by mm-hmm. the culture. And they never meet a conservative. They never meet a Trump supporter.
Let alone engage them.
Let alone engage them in mm-hmm. conversation. So use it to your advantage, because it'll make you a lot sharper. It'll make you a lot smarter.
Deborah Krause. Hey, Krause in the house.
Hey, there it is.
She says, yay, Knowles. I just want to ask you to recommend a good book on American history. You kind of sort of just did that. But sort of survey style, she needs a brush up.
Oh, interesting. Well, I'll recommend some popular books that I do recommend. Samuel Eliot Morison, The Admiral for the Ocean Sea on Christopher Columbus is a great book. Mm-hmm. And then for the really popular ones that a lot of people have read that are good histories too, David McCullough is great. David McCullough wrote 1776. He's written a number of early revolutionary American history books. Ron Chernow's books are really good on Hamilton. The musical came out of that. I would recommend Nathaniel Philbrick wrote a great book about the Mayflower, voyage from the Mayflower and the early Plymouth colony. That's really good. And the best history of the Cold War would be John Gaddis, whom I just talked about. Mm-hmm. Strategies of Containment is a really good one. That's it for now.
That'll last you for the rest of 2018, Deborah. Because they're all tomes.
They are. They're not bathroom reading. You know, you'd want to. Samuel Eliot Morison, though, of all of them, is so charming because he's writing from a different era. Hmm. He's writing from an era that was less clinical and politically correct and everything. So they're all really wonderful reads, but his in particular is fun because you're getting a look at how historians viewed the world from a different era that it was in many ways much more fun and light than our own.
Interesting. Joel J., thoughts on the Orthodox Church? I'm an Oriental Orthodox Christian. So
Malankara.
Malankara? Indian Orthodox.
I love the Orthodox Church.
Yeah.
I wish that they would reunite. It'd be really nice. But I've heard the East and the West, the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, described as the two lungs of Christianity because they don't really disagree on very much. They disagree theologically on the filioque, that the Catholic Church and the Nicene Creed says that the Holy Spirit proceeds forth from the Father and the Son. Mm-hmm. And the Orthodox Church, to my understanding, believes that it proceeds forth only from the Father. But otherwise, they don't disagree on too much. I describe the Orthodox Church as twice the liturgy, half the Pope, because the Eastern Orthodox Church has maintained beautiful liturgical traditions, while in the West, so many of our churches are these suburban monstrosities made of wood, and they look terrible, and they have acoustic guitars, and sing about hungry hearts.
Hey now.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm actually restraining myself in my description of these changes to the liturgy. Uh-huh. So I really do like that. And I love Indian Christianity. Just a little side note on this. Mm-hmm. My confirmation saint is Thomas. Mm-hmm. Thomas called Didymus, Doubting Thomas. And Thomas is said to have gone to India and started a group of Christians there, the Mar Thoma. And I visited India and got to take a little look at some of these churches.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really cool. Yeah, it dates back to first century, I suppose.
Wow.
So really, really good. Keep doing it. And you know, if you're in the Orthodox Church, it would be really nice if you could lobby your patriarch to come on back and reunite the Church Universal. That'd be really nice.
Lots of work there for that guy.
A little bit of work.
Just a little bit of work.
You know, the Holy Spirit can guide what it pleases, yeah.
Kyle Turnage, do you think that if Gary Cohn replaces General Kelly as chief of staff at the White House, then the mooch will finally make a comeback?
I talked to the mooch about many things off the record and ways that I would like the administration to change and ways that he would like the administration to change. So I don't know. I don't have any insider information on this, and I don't think the mooch does either, but I really want the mooch to make a comeback.
Totally has some insider information.
I don't know if he does. He did leave. His leaving the White House coincided with John Kelly coming in. And now that also, there were some good things that happened during this time.
He left.
He left, as you can watch the interview, and...
Oh, I did.
But it coincided with some good things when John Kelly came in. We lost the two biggest leakers in the administration. That was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And sources of constant chaos and consternation. Whether or not John Kelly should be ousted for the handling of this domestic abuse staffer, kind of convoluted personal interest affair, I'm not so sure. I really don't care about the tabloidy aspects of this White House. I just want it to run properly, because when it runs properly, it's the most conservative and effective White House that we've seen possibly since Coolidge. So I'll defer to their superior knowledge. I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon and say John Kelly hasn't done any good things. He's been pretty good in the role. But But if there is an opportunity for the mooch to get back in the White House, that has my vote.
Oh, Lord have mercy. That would be interesting. SNL skits just write themselves.
I love the guy. I will just say this about, I did this interview with the mooch when he came into the studio.
And
I
noticed just a couple weeks ago.
And I noticed a lot of the YouTube comments said, thanks for doing this long interview. I didn't realize this was a serious guy. Because we have this image from the media of like, he's the mooch and he says naughty words and all this. This is a guy who graduated from Harvard Law School. He's
a billionaire.
He's a self-made billionaire. He's created two terribly, phenomenally successful financial services firms. He's regularly citing the Federalist and Cicero and the framers. He studied economics and classics in college.
So then why did he fundraise for Obama in 2008?
Well, you know, he's a New York Republican. And I come from New York and I've hung out with a lot of New York Republicans. New York Republican Party is a confusing place. It's a different beast.
I know. This is your conversation. This is Elisha just getting a little off track. So we'll get back on track now.
I suppose so. But I will say that bit I was ribbing him a little bit for that support. But you know, in New York there were about three viable Republicans in the whole state.
Yep.
So I do give a little more grace on that front. Just a little bit.
Elise Stefanik, just keep up the good work. Jeremy Gordon says, Michael, how do you respond to someone who says transgenderism is someone's private business and the public should mind its own business?
Oh, I agree. I'm the last person in America who agrees with that statement. the left, the pro-transgender bathroom left, certainly doesn't agree with that. There are like 15 of these people in the entire country who genuinely suffer from confusion, psychological confusion about their gender. And it sounds like a terrible affliction and unfortunately, a lot of what is being encouraged now by the culture to alleviate this condition, such as mutilating their bodies and surgeries to appear like the other sex, doesn't appear to do anything to lower suicide rates or rates of depression or anything like that. So I think it's very reckless for the culture to encourage self-mutilation, especially now the self-mutilation of children, confusing children about their gender identities is really horrific. But I agree, it's a private business. It should remain a private business. I have no desire to talk about it. But the left isn't talking about it for the 15 people in the country who suffer from this affliction. That's not why they're doing it. They're doing it because it serves a euphemistic purpose. It serves a purpose of language because central to so many ideologies that feed into the intersectional left in 2018 is the erasure of sexual difference. They must erase sexual difference. And so much of intersectional feminism relies on this. The political lobby for gay marriage to redefine marriage relies on this. And the transgender debate relies on this. They want massive federal laws to decide which bathroom somebody uses because they need to say that men and women are precisely the same. They're identical. They're not complementary, which is the traditional view of things. But obviously, that isn't the case. So if a person is confused about his gender and wants to wear a dress, that's perfectly fine. As I just said, I'm from New York. You know, the left is unbelievable. They've somehow made drag queens boring. I didn't know they could do that. Drag queens
not
are like
RuPaul.
The most. No, that's true. Yeah, but they've made it this somber, serious thing where what affliction do you have? I've lived in New York a long time, and you go down to the Village, and there are drag queens wearing silly clothes, and you know, doing performances and singing and all of this. That's very fun, but now it's a somber, serious thing. And of course, they can't answer even basic questions. So, if you ask a lefty advocate of these sort of things, you say, "Okay, a man says that he's really a woman. How does he know that he's really a woman? What is femininity to him? How would he know that? If there's no difference." Between men and women, then why do you call your ideology feminism? If there's no difference, then why? How is the female a category when it's convenient, but not a category whatsoever when it's inconvenient? If gender is simply socially constructed, then why would people go to such enormous lengths as to mutilate their bodies to appear to be the other gender if it's just a social construct? But obviously, because none of that makes any sense. It's an ideological and it's a rationalist motivation to erase sexual difference, and we shouldn't give them an inch on that. We shouldn't give it's not compassionate to anybody to pretend that reality is different than it is. The only way the truth above all things is what we ought to seek, and to allow people to encourage people in delusion is really really outrageous and not compassionate in the least.
Next question is from Woody Fool. Where did you get that cool industrial chic lamp?
Ooh, I think
they're referring to the one to your right.
I didn't even notice it. Right? Oh, yes, that one. I love that one.
Are we even allowed to say where it's from if it's from somewhere?
Probably
do they have
not, because she'll
sponsor?
Never work in this town again.
We do have a designer.
We do have a wonderful designer.
Store where it came from.
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know. I just show up in there.
I'm gonna take a guess. I'm gonna think maybe Living Spaces.
That could be.
I'm a fan of mix and match goods, like, you know, some garage sale, some flea market.
Listen, I didn't design any of this set. Obviously, because it isn't a set, it's the broom closet of the Ben Shapiro Show. So I guess Ben must have been using it for a week or something. He said, I don't want this trash, get it out of my room. And then that became the lighting for my set.
But it's cool.
I dig it.
Maybe find out and you can tweet out the answer later or Insta story it or something. Because maybe, you know, more conservatives out there would love that industrial chic lamp. We only have a few minutes left, so let's try to roll through.
Speed through.
More long-winded answers over here. Brad Wendling, hi, Michael. Can you explain the difference between conservatism and libertarianism?
I would love to. This isn't going to be a short answer, but I would love to do that.
Brace yourselves, folks.
I really like this question. I sort of object to even the word conservatism because the topic of the panel last night was the future of conservatism, because I don't think that there ought to be a conservative ideology. Michael Oakeshott, who's a British political philosopher that conservatives should read but they don't in America, defines ideology as the formalized abridgment of the supposed substratum of rational truth contained in the tradition. Ideology is a post-French Revolution way of taking all the richness and beauty of reality and saying, really, it's just these three bullet points. That's all of reality, and that's all that matters. And if you it's a flattening of reality into this, trying to comprehend it in this ultimately absurd way, and it leads to really terrible things. So I don't think we should do that. The conservative coalition of ideas until recently included traditionalists, the religious right, neoconservatives, and libertarians. Bill Buckley, the founder of the modern conservative movement, created something called fusionist conservatism, or the fusionist ideology and philosophy, which is you combine libertarian economics with Cold War anti-communism and social conservatism. So you bring together brilliantly the traditionalists and the libertarians, who might not have that much to do with one another. Mm-hmm. There's a left-wing libertarianism as well, called libertinism, and you bring them together into this coalition. After the Cold War, that raison d'etre sort of fell apart because it was premised on anti-communism. So what do these people have to do with each other now? Clearly, free markets and ordered liberty is an essential aspect of the United States. It's led to great American prosperity, and it's raised up the rest of the world. So I think the conservative coalition would do well to keep incorporating all of these libertarian ideas. But libertarianism, unlike the conservative thought, is essentially ideological. And so as a result, it's insufficient to explain the world. Whereas conservatism, I think the conservative thought comes from disparate people who sort of disagree with one another, just like the West does. The West isn't some uniform ideology. It's a bunch of people disagreeing with one another. And so in a conservative thought, I would suggest reading Edmund Burke and Russell Kirk and Michael Oakeshott and Tocqueville and Hayek and on and on and on. Whereas I think libertarians would probably boot Burke right out of there, or certainly boot Kirk or Oakeshott. It's a little too thin for them. And I would always try to figure out what is the root of these thoughts. If it is the tradition, then what is that tradition? Mm-hmm. What of these institutions and what of these traditions have endured? And then sprinkle on some libertarian economics, and you've got yourself a very nice political coalition.
So we only have about 10 minutes left.
Yikes.
And everyone that's watching should remember that our conversation is live for everyone to watch, but you can only be a part of it and ask questions if you are a subscriber. So go to dailywire.com right now to subscribe and join us. You have a few minutes left to ask Michael some questions. And also be sure to tune in for next month's episode featuring the one and only Ben Shapiro. That will be held on Tuesday, March 13th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Pacific time. Do not miss it. It will be hosted once again by me, Elisha Krauss. Joel J. says, favorite fictional universe?
CNN. CNN is my favorite fictional universe. If it didn't exist, I would have to invent it. It is so wonderful because, you see, I go through the world and I see the sun is shining and the economy is doing very well and taxes are being reformed and the government's getting off my back and, oh, we're being respected in the world again. And that's, oh, and we've got justices now who actually support the Constitution and believe that the words on the page mean what the words on the page mean. That's really nice. But it's, it can get a little boring, guys. I'm so exhausted at the end of the day because I get sick and tired of winning. Then I get to turn on CNN and I get to go into the fictional universe where this dragon lady in North Korea who makes Imelda Marcus look like Martha Washington, where she's this wonderful leader of the world and America's so embarrassing and it's awful. We're causing chaos and mayhem and bombs are going to go off and the missiles are going to fly. That's very exciting. So I certainly, CNN is almost reason enough to keep bundled cable just so you can keep watching that wonderful fantasy fiction.
I think I'm going to cancel cable. I really do. I mean, I can watch everything online, like at the Daily Wire.
That's true.
Like all the shows I care about are
that's
there.
That's true. But, you know, once enough of us start cutting those cords, then how are the lefties going to get their false narratives out on ESPN and CNN? It's going to be much harder.
Who knows? Evan Stanley, Michael. He wants to know if you've hired Ben Shapiro to serenade you and sweet little Lisa at dinner tonight. And if so, how much does he charge? Is it by the hour or by the song?
I cannot believe that I was able to con Ben into doing that even once.
Was it really you or the God King, though?
It was.
I think it was God King Jeremy Bourne.
It required a lot of forces. We had the CEO of the company actually had to drive over and get the violin. That, unfortunately, that may have been a one-time experience. And that's very sad. But Ben, if you want to surprise me, Valentine's Day isn't over yet. I'm still waiting here.
Get Ben, you know, tweet him where your reservations are, and he can show up with a Stradivarius.
He's going to show up with a machine gun. in the violin case, probably.
Jonathan L. Michael, I've always considered myself a staunch liberal until I started listening to you. Wow, impressive.
All right, cool.
Maybe you've converted somebody.
Sweet.
Your points and arguments make sense. Why does it seem like liberals can't actually debate people and use logic?
I don't blame them, actually.
Why is that?
Because they don't understand that there's a difference of thought. They actually don't understand it. They preach diversity and tolerance, and then they're shocked and appalled to find out that people disagree with them about anything. So there was a study that came out from Jonathan Haidt a few years ago that showed that, generally speaking, conservatives understand the left-wing position, but lefties don't understand the conservative position, that conservatives view the world by more value metrics than lefties do. And so take it with a grain of salt, as with any social scientific study, but it does make sense to me. I think that I can basically articulate the left-wing position on just about any issue. And for the vast, vast majority of my lefty friends, I don't think they could do that about what I think. So when it comes to abortion, I understand the arguments for abortion. They're somewhat compelling, that a woman ought to have autonomy over her own body and it's unfair. There's a kind of biological unfairness that she has to carry this child even in some awful case of rape or what have you. And so it would be convenient if that weren't a living human being inside the body so that we could just kill it and not have to deal with it. But I understand that is actually a compelling argument. I don't think they understand the argument that human life is sacred from the beginning, that human life has dignity from the beginning and ought to be protected. I think what they honestly believe is that conservative men who are pro-life just hate women. They just don't like women. They're misogynist.
They want to tell them what to do.
They want to tell them what boss them around and everything. So,
I mean, to be fair, you are really bossy when you tell me to go get you coffee.
I know, and I usually scream it when there's not enough milk in it. I throw it at the wall. I smash it. But that, you know, the one good measure, I'm pleased to hear that you've changed your mind on some things and come around a little bit to the right. One measure of which guy in a debate or an argument is correct is which guy doesn't have steam pouring out of his ears and screaming and shrieking. Usually when your voice gets loud and loud and loud, it's because you don't have very much to say and you don't really believe in the sort of things that you're espousing. Whereas the calm person who can just describe to you what he thinks and why he thinks it, probably that guy has a more sophisticated and thought out view of the world.
Interesting. There's only a few minutes left, so let's keep rolling. Samuel Hicks says, how much of Thomas Sowell's work have you read?
I love Thomas Sowell. I love him so much. I was very sad when he retired from his column. I've probably read all of the guy's columns. I've been reading him for years and years. I love his books. I forget all the titles. Conflict of Visions, I really enjoyed. He wrote the really famous one about race and geography. That was a very good book. And I really like watching him on Firing Line. One great thing, apparently Norm Macdonald, the greatest living comedian, does this too, is he'll just watch old Firing Lines on YouTube. That was Bill Buckley's show, and he'd bring on a person of either the right or the left and have an interesting conversation. And he is great on Firing Line. The man is so brilliant because he can talk about a wide variety of subjects with seriousness and a depth of knowledge, and also because he came from nothing. I mean, the guy was not born with a silver spoon, but he's a wonderful writer. So yeah, I recommend, I really like Conflict of Visions. Maybe that's my favorite of his, but read anything you can by him. He's a terrific writer.
Jeremiah Peterson says, hi, Michael. How much of your show is you acting a role and how much is actually who you are? Who is the real Michael Knowles?
Don't you want to know, Jeremiah?
Well,
wouldn't
this Valentine's
you like
Day,
to know?
You can find out.
Yeah, that's right. Everything's coming off this Valentine's Day. You know, obviously we did that promo, which was a little over the top even for the Daily Wire.
No, I think that's the real
that's
Michael
the real one. That's
having
the real
been
one.
In the room when we filmed that, I think you had too much fun with it.
I had a lot of fun with it.
But really, I think that there's an element of, you know, I was in talk radio for a very long time. And there's an element of everything that I said on the radio, I strongly believed and had, you know, issues behind it.
Yeah.
Arguments behind it and all that stuff. But there is an element of like when you listen to radio or when people listen to a podcast, sometimes you more forcefully present an argument because of how you know. So then the audience really like takes it. You know what I mean? If you're just sitting back and kind of like chill talking about it, it might not have as much of an impact. So how much of your show is you kind of forcefully or humorously making that argument, or is that the real Michael? Is that what sweet little Lisa gets every night?
It is, unfortunately for her, it's what she gets every night. Obviously, if you're doing a show, you have to be more succinct and try to sum things up more quickly. But the show is entirely me. It's something I really love about this format. You know, I am an actor, so I've done little indie movies and plays in New York and LA, and there that is playing a role, and you have to create the inner life of the character, and you know, do those things that you learn in acting school. And something I really, really love about this, even broadcasting from the broom closet of the Ben Shapiro show, is that I get to say whatever I want. I'm never censored. There's never, even Ben isn't breathing down my neck, even, you know, he's waiting to push the fire button, but he's never telling me what to say. Nobody does any of that. And I think at most outlets,
you have all editorial license.
I have 100% editorial license. And I think at a lot of outfits, and you know this from talk radio, you get a lot of pressure from the top, and they say you have to think this and you can't do that. I don't get any of that, and it's why it's really so refreshing. I don't have to run my script by anybody. I don't have to run an opinion by anybody, and it's really enjoyable until it gets me fired. But until then, it's going to be a really good time.
Maybe that's why they don't edit you, is because Ben is just
he's
looking
just
for
waiting,
a chance.
Salivating.
Sarah Turner says, Michael, I'm trying to go to a more expensive school without going completely into debt. How would you suggest not getting into debt too much, especially if you're trying to do law as a postgraduate?
Oh, well, if you're going to law school, then you're just going to have to pay a lot of money, and that's the way it goes. But you'll, with some rare exceptions, sometimes you can go for a reduced price if you agree to do some amount of public service afterward. But one thing I noticed is for a lot of elite schools, they'll pay for you to go if you can't afford it. So I was very fortunate. I paid very little money to go to Yale, and that was really nice. It's because I didn't come from money, and so the rich kids had to pay a lot of money, and I did not. For certain schools, there's a point at which you get really diminishing returns. So for some sets of schools, they're very, very expensive, but you don't necessarily get a huge benefit from it, either as a matter of education, because really you can get a good education anywhere, and really you could get a good education on your own. But in some places, you get a good social network. There are old boys clubs at a lot of universities. Some schools that charge really top dollar, you don't get any of that. You don't get a particularly great education. You don't get the kind of professional benefits that come from that. So I would avoid that. If you're going to go to a top brand name school, just pay it because it'll pay off. You'll have a lot of opportunities that come out of it. Mm. If you're going to major in transgender dance studies, as I did, you know, maybe you don't want to go into a ton of debt for that.
Go to a community college for that.
Yeah, that's community colleges have great transgender dance programs. you don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish. You don't want to go to a lesser school or a school that won't help you as much in life because you didn't want to pay an extra 10 grand. But also, it is so crazy to go $250,000 into debt just so that you can say, I went to the fancy private school instead of to, I don't know, whatever the public school is by mm-hmm. you. That would be ludicrous. And this is clearly a bubble. All of these funds, all of the increased price tags of these schools are going to fund the deputy assistant dean of sexual diversity and condom distribution. And there are so many of these things now, as the institution itself is being hollowed out academically, that it's a bubble that's going to pop. And it would be really a shame if you were the person who bought a house in mid-2007 and you're caught with something that isn't that valuable that you paid way, way too much money for. That's a long way, but I don't want to give you simple advice and say, don't go to a good college or don't pay this. It should be a really cold calculation that you make.
It's going to change per the individual. Maybe going to an undergraduate school that's a state school and then going to a Yale or Harvard for law school is a better bet.
Or if you think it's easier to get into law school from I don't know, some higher end private school, then maybe you have to take that into consideration. Be very cold in calculating, though. Do not go in blind and say, oh, it will all work out, because you could end up with $250,000 of debt hanging around your neck and not a lot in the way of prospects afterwards.
Or you could be like me and just drop out and look where I ended up.
On a couch with Michael Knowles, baby.
So maybe you should consider an Ivy League school. I'm just saying. And you'd still end up on a couch with Michael Knowles. This is our last question. It comes from Joel J. Joel wants to know, what are your thoughts on right and left intellectuals?
There are a lot of intellectuals we could bring up. This one in particular, I think, is asking about this YouTube guy, Sargon of Akkad. Sargon drives me crazy and I hate his guts. Not because I don't like his videos or anything, but he won't come on my show. I've been trying to get him on my show for 6 months. So if you know Sargon, bring him on. I would like to talk to him. I don't know. There are a lot of self-styled intellectuals now, and that tells you a lot about our culture, that these are the intellectuals. Some people really are intellectuals. Like Thomas Sowell, for instance. That word has been stretched beyond any kind of bounds, I think. So really what I like are people who can give a fresh take on politics and culture that can explain the world. And I don't care if they have 17 degrees from whatever university about it. I don't care if they got published in Slate one time and now they're a public intellectual or something. Scott Adams is the great example of this. Scott Adams is the Dilbert guy who worked in business most of his life and drew a cartoon that's very entertaining. And he, at this moment, on a great many topics, is a really good observer of politics. So I'll read him. There are plenty of intellectuals who write, self-appointed intellectuals, who write for the New York Times op-ed page, for instance, who are big dummies who don't know anything. I mean, when was the last time David Brooks had an original idea or a serious idea? I don't know, like the late 80s or something.
You mean
early
when he
90s?
Wasn't blaspheming conservatism?
Yeah, or
you
know, when he was writing about how Barack Obama had a perfect crease in his pant leg and so he'd make a great president. Those intellectuals I'm very skeptical of. Anyone who calls himself an intellectual,
just ignore.
Right off on the bat. My favorite guy who is a public intellectual on the right at the moment is my priest. Father George Rutler is really good. And to talk to somebody like him, or to an Andrew Clavin even, you know, people who have been on this earth for a while and have read all of the books and have formed thoughts, you realize how paltry the current array of so-called intellectuals is. And maybe, as is so often the case with conservative thought, maybe we should look back a couple decades or centuries to gather a bit more wisdom.
Well, this wasn't too bad.
This was okay.
It was okay.
I think I made it through. I had some covfefe in my cup.
We made it through. Thank you so much.
I was going to give up covfefe for Lent. I would have died.
I'd
be dead on this couch right now.
Oh, man. There would have been a lot of tears in that cup that wouldn't have been leftist.
Mac, no. true.
This episode of The Conversation with our very own Michael Knowles has been brought to you by Skillshare, so be sure to check them out. And also tune in for next month's episode featuring the one and only Ben Shapiro on Tuesday, March 13th at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Pacific time. I'm Elisha Krauss. I wish you all the very happiest Valentine's Day, and thanks for watching.